Okay, moving then to the office building, which is probably the most progressed component on the project. Just quick updates on that. So Wheel and Sprocket started their build out. So they are slotted for late May, June 1st opening. They're still on schedule for that. We also signed a deal with a coffee shop. We haven't named them yet, but right next to Wheel and Sprocket, and in collaboration in a very unique way with Wheel and Sprocket, will be a coffee shop that will be available to the community. As soon as that LOI gets, as soon as that deal gets worked through, it's about a 60-90 day build-out. So I would say late summer, early fall, when the city can expect their coffee shop. Then next to the coffee shop, and again, this is first floor retail, is a temporary space where Exos will be. And they want to take that space for a year until the Performance Village is set. So we're going to let them take that space, and that will fill out the entire first floor retail. And then, obviously, we've got the rest of the office space. We've started our build-out third floor. Greg is still searching for his permit on the second floor. And then we have another really large office tenant that we haven't announced yet that is taking the remainder of the space. So we'll just give you a quick video on what that looks like, too. Everybody sees sort of it half, what looks like half built, but it's substantially done. So we'll just do a quick video on that as well. Okay, so that's the north side. Ian, if you don't mind taking the south side.
Thank you. Ian Martin with Mandel Group. My colleague Emily here, we also have a video that we'll share with you, and Emily will provide some overall project updates, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the TIF, given the questions that we heard earlier. So.
Emily Chalbini with Mandel Group. Wanted to provide some updates on the apartment. So we are currently on the Plan Commission meeting agenda for this Thursday, and that is for a referral and recommendation back to you guys on a PDD amendment application, a CSM, and a site plan amendment application. All of those are regarding the changes that we had talked about last time we were here, with shifting the M1 mixed-use building to the newly acquired DOT parcel, and converting what was on that site, adding another 53-unit apartment building, which is the B5 building, and adding 11,000 square feet of commercial. Our revised GMP amendment with Catalyst Construction is underway. We're looking to finalize that in the next couple of weeks here, and we are currently close to finalizing our loan documents with our lender. Our attorneys are now coordinating and trying to finalize that. Oh, I can show you our video too.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't think we have music.
We don't have music.
Sorry.
Could that be in sync for you?
I'll just do a narration because one of the questions was, what are we getting more? You notice that there's very little on-street parking. With the prior approved proposal, it was all on-street parking. Now it'll be underground parking. That comes at a significant expense and increase in the value of the building. In addition, the prior proposal was for two-story buildings. These are now three at additional value. And there's another building that Emily talked about, which is another 65 units on second, third floor?
That's right.
Second and third floor with a retail component on the base floor. That was not contemplated in the original proposal. So, are
Right, so this retail building, like you're saying, is 11,000 square feet. The M1 originally was about 30,000 square feet of retail with the apartment units above. We now have a total of 33,000 square feet of retail with the similar number of apartment units. So added a net 3,000 square feet of retail.
So I'll try to talk about the TIF part of the project, which is, you know, the part of the project that does not lend itself easily to animation and pretty pictures. So bear with me because this may get a little dry, but it's an important issue, so I'll do my best to cover it. So when I think of TIF, you know, people, that's the acronym for Tax Incremental Financing. Lots of people refer to it as a, including our group, as a public-private partnership. And we call it that for, you know, a couple of reasons. It is a financing tool under the state laws that allow municipalities to use newly created tax, real estate taxes, to help fund projects that wouldn't otherwise happen. And so it's a powerful tool. It's a common one. I say it's a partnership for a couple of reasons. One element of it is it's a lifestyle, it's a community amenity partnership. The plan for Ballpark Commons adds highly unique amenities to Franklin. These are not just unique amenities to Franklin, but frankly anywhere in the Milwaukee metro. So whether it's a baseball stadium, new restaurants, new hotels, new coffee shops, new golf, all of those things, those are lifestyle amenities that have an impact that goes beyond just the property lines. It's a partnership in an economic sense, which I think is the most obvious way that people think of it. And so when you think of what is the financial partnership, the developer's job is to build what we promise you we will build and operate it appropriately. So you've got to underwrite the developer and make sure that you're comfortable that that's going to happen. We hired Baker Tilly to do a quick study on the economic impact of the apartment project we've proposed. And I'll give you just a couple of numbers. About 499 direct and indirect jobs from the apartment project. Some of those are long-term permanent positions. Certainly we'll staff, you know, probably six people of our own, but it goes a lot further than that. Baker Tilly projected that it increased disposable household income in Franklin by $23 million. That's money that's available to get spent at local businesses, restaurants, grocery stores, you name it. And then, you know, long term, the project is $1 million of tax. The apartments are $1 million roughly of tax value annually. Now, once the TIF burns off, of course, the city only gets their piece of it. Everybody else gets a chunk of it, but the city gets 25% of it. Roughly, so that's a meaningful revenue source for the city. On this project in particular, there's a couple of things to point out. Some people have talked about the length of the TIF, TID 7, and it's different than maybe what they had seen before. The city's consultants have projected that there are about $6.4 million of value from the apartment project in the new TIF. After the MRO payments are stopped. So $6.4 million of value to the city at the end of the life of the TIF. This project, as the apartment project, will pay $3.2 million of impact fees to the city. Those go to various sources, but it's a significant amount of money. I just wanted to highlight those things because, you know, it's easy to talk TIF, but I think when you boil it down, it really is a partnership. It's a partnership in that we have to deliver what we promise. There's all kinds of legal documents that will obligate us to do that. And in exchange for that, we ask to participate in the new tax value we create. The first fundamental question you have to ask about a TIF. It's the statutory question. It's the one we all got to get comfortable with, or the conversation stops, and that's the but-for test. Would this development happen but for the public-private partnership? There's a bunch of different ways you can analyze this, but the easiest way to analyze it for the apartment project is just look what the project is going to cost and compare that to the value once you build it. And when you do that, we've got a cost of about $57.2 million and a value of $49.7 million. So the second we're done building this and we fill it up, it's worth $7.5 million roughly less than it cost us to build it. That's the classic but-for test. So you say, okay, well, you've got that gap in financing. Next question is, you know, how do you overcome it? And that's really the where the TIF money comes in the deal. There are several questions about, well, how do you size the TIF? You know, how do you know whether the city is getting too much money into the deal, whether it's not enough money? And so, again, it's a complicated financial analysis, but the city's got all the right people helping them. I'll give you my take on it. And the first step you have to do is you just got to figure out what it's going to cost, how much you can rent the units for, and how much it's going to cost you to operate. That's where you start with the whole thing. And the good news in this case is we've pretty much done all that, or we're very close to having it all done. The next part of it is you have to figure out how you pay for it, right? So if it costs $57 million, I got to get money to pay $57 million to build the thing. So the first stopping point in that analysis is the bank debt. So as part of this project, our underwriting, we're going to get a loan for roughly $41 million. That's what's in all the projections. When I go to a bank and I ask for a loan, that loan amount and the bank will size it based on really two critical factors. The first one is what they call leverage, or loan to cost, loan to value. And all that's a simple way of saying, you know, what is the loan amount as a percentage of your overall project cost? The market these days is typically 60 to 70%. At $41 million, I'm about 71.2% roughly in terms of leverage. So we've not left any money on the table by way of going out in the marketplace and getting debt. That debt comes with all kinds of guarantees and recourse and risk that we underwrite as a developer to get the debt, but that's the number. The next important touch point is debt service coverage ratio. So people vary a little bit, but I think the general consensus, and again, the city's consultants can weigh in on this, is you have to have a debt service cover of 1.25. That just means you have, for every dollar of debt, you have $1.25 of income coming in the door. So you start there, and so you say, okay, I have a $57 million project. Based on the factors we have here, I can get a $41 million loan. So then you say, okay, and this is where the real trick is and all this, I got to raise cash, right? Because I'm not going to get all $57 million from a bank. So in this project, we're going to have to put about $11 to $12 million of cash into the deal. That's cash equity. Some of it comes internally from Mandel and the principals of Mandel, and the balance of it we raise from private parties. It is the lifeblood of our business. If we fail to deliver on investment return for our investors, our business stops. So we don't take it lightly. It's every bit, if not more important, than the bank debt piece of it. The good news is we've done this for a long time. We've done it on a lot of projects, and the market is actually pretty transparent amongst all developers about what sort of returns you have to give an investor to get them to invest in the project, right? You can't go and get $12 million if you're not offering a return on somebody's money. So I'm comfortable. I've already shared with the staff and the consultant. I'll share with you guys what those numbers are. So there's really two factors that investors look at. The first is cash-on-cash return. So how much money do they get on an annual basis on their investment? To raise money for apartments, you need to be in a 9 to 12% range. The second part of it is internal rate of return, or what's the total return on the investment after you've sold it at some point in the future. In this marketplace, it's about 12 to 15%. So what that allows me to do is say, okay, I know I have to provide those returns to our investors, or I can't raise the money and I can't build the project, and it doesn't make any sense for me to waste anybody's time on it. So in this case, you take those first two steps. I got $41 million in loan. I got $12 million roughly in equity. And then the balance of it is the public-private partnership, the TIF dollars in the deal. So from a conceptual standpoint, that's how we size it. The numbers are transparent. They're open book to the city and its consultants. One other thing I mentioned that we've agreed to in this case is a contingent interest concept, or sometimes called a clawback. So, you know, there's a concern out there that, oh, this is just too much money coming into the deal. It's money going to a greedy developer, and why are we doing it? What we agreed to help get people comfortable with that concept is a clawback. So if this project performs really well and that IRR number goes over a certain trip rate, we will share all the money we get beyond that IRR with the city. The city gets it's called a contingent interest, the city gets a percentage of it. So it's just another way that the city knows the money that's going into the deal is sized appropriately to make sure the project happens. And if we all do great, we all share in the upside of it. So the last, not the last, but second to last concept here is how these TIFs get structured. And there's a lot of different nomenclature about how you describe these things. The apartment TIF is structured as a developer finance TIF, or municipal revenue obligation. What that means is the city agrees to give the developer, us, a portion of the taxes only if we actually create the tax value. So let's say Mandel Group just flakes out and we never build this thing. That means there's $0 of tax creation. That means there's no money that ever comes out of the city for that, for the apartment project. There's no risk. To get that $41 million loan I talked about, I take that promise from the city, and I go to the bank and I say, I need $41 million. The city's agreed to share the real estate taxes with me at this level. So it's important in getting the debt, but that's how we've structured it. There's a couple of clarifications or responses I'd like to give to a couple of questions. One of them is, what's the subsidy? So I'll talk about the word subsidy in a second, but I think the real question is, what's the level? What are the real dollars here? So in an MRO structure, a developer finance TIF, where we take the risk of building the project, what we get in exchange is a stream of income over a 20-year period. So while we're building it in the first couple of years, we don't get anything, right? Because there's no real tax value. Once it's built and it's stabilized, the city assessor will tell us what the tax value is, and that's how it's established. So when you look at how do you actually monetize a stream of income, right, you have to apply a time value of money methodology to that. So the easiest way to think of it is a net present value. So in this case, what we've proposed, if you take all the income payments, all the share of the taxes we would get only if we built the thing and it got assessed the way we think it will, and you put a net present value on it, it works out to be about $7.6 million. So if you add it all up in a lump sum, you know, you just add every payment up, it's a much bigger number, obviously. But if you were trying to figure out what's that mean today in real dollars, it's about $7.6 million. That should make a lot of sense, right, because we had a $7.5 million gap at the very outset of the deal. So, you know, the way I think of it is, would you rather have $5 a year for 20 years, or would you rather have $100 today? Right, that's the sort of concept behind it. So we've heard the word subsidy, and this is constantly coming up in every TIF discussion I have in a municipality, this one and the others. And subsidy is obviously a pejorative term that's meant to imply that there's a government handout to some greedy developer for which the city's getting nothing in return. That's sort of the point that people are trying to make when they say subsidy. I actually, because I've sort of lost track of it, looked it up in Webster's Dictionary, what subsidy meant, and I wrote it down. It's a grant or gift of money. That's what Webster's Dictionary defines it as. So when you compare what does subsidy actually mean to what's happening here, a TIF just doesn't fit the definition of a subsidy. Again, we only get anything if we actually build the project. So it's not a give out. We create value that didn't otherwise exist. So that's the concept of the subsidy. So there was one other comment, I think, suggesting that what we ought to do is take, what the city ought to do is take the tax value from the project, Ballpark Commons, and apply it to other projects in the city that need it more or are, you know, otherwise more preferable to put the money into. So there's a couple problems with that. One is you can't do it by law. You can't take money from one TIF district and apply it to another TIF district somewhere else in town. So I just don't think it works as a practical matter. And the other more fundamental piece of it is it doesn't embrace the reality of how a TIF works. It's not tax value that sits here today. It's only tax value if and when it gets built. So to say, well, we're going to use the tax money we get now and apply it to some other project doesn't work, because the whole point here is, but for the TIF money going into this project, there is no tax value. So that's it. That's the end. I'm happy to ask your, sorry to be so wonkish about it all. I guess the last thing maybe I'd say is, and I said this last time and I want to reinforce it again this time, we have covered so much territory on a very complicated issue. There's version F, version U, whatever it is. I don't keep track of it that way. But these are complicated financial models. And every time you change an interest rate by a tenth of a point, or you change a projected tax value by $100,000, or you change the delivery date for an apartment unit or a retail building, that has a ripple effect that goes throughout the financial model. And so that, I believe, is the reason why there's so many versions of this stuff, is it's a little bit of a whack-a-mole. You know, you think you solve one problem and another one pops up right next to it. So all that being said, we've done a lot of work, we've covered a lot of territory, and I think that's important for us all to remember. I was looking at the Eller schedule, as a lot of you were, and we burn about $2,000 a day in interest on this project right now. And so the quicker we add increment and value, the easier it will be to digest that $2,000 a day.
So I'll just Ian answered a lot of the questions, and like I said, I tried to jot as many of the questions down as I could. So I'll just, I know Mary, you wanted me to try to answer some of the questions that were posed today the best I can. So I'll do that to the best of my ability. But the first question, I let go of the first time, but I'm not going to let go of it this time, which is this notion of questioning ethics and my contribution to Steve Taylor's campaign back, I think, in 2014. I think what people forget is I'm a resident of the city, and it's my right to do that. And moreover, when that was done, and I'm going to turn to Jesse, because Jesse, if you recall back, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, this issue became an issue. And as I joked at the time, Steve was acquitted. So I don't want to keep dealing with this knucklehead comment and the implication that there's ethics at play here. So I don't know if you recall this issue, Steve. I know you certainly do, because it was humorous at the time. But this was like, I think, 2014, and there was some district attorney that said there was some foul play, and you looked into it, and it doesn't ring a bell. Well, if you get maybe next time, because it's going to keep coming up. So anyway,
I recall the question arising once with some form of financial employment relationship or whatever, and the answers I received were does not exist.
Right. So we've kind of been down this road, but what, you know, I don't know the point that the person's trying to make other than just to put into question potentially ethics, which I take issue with, so I wanted to put that on the record. The next question was the Ehlers versions, and I think Ian said it well, which is, yeah, there's multiple versions. I don't think that's anything other than just, you know, people trying to get to a deal, right, and trying to figure out how do we get this thing done. It implies not that these deals don't work. You guys had your meeting yesterday with Ehlers. It implies there's been a lot of hard work on this thing. The other topic,